Coming up in this episode, we hear from Dietmar Finger and some of the Isla High School students about COP26, and we also hear from two of the students that are behind the Isla Times regarding their first edition.
This is Isla Podcast.
Welcome back to This is Isla. This is Julian Thurgood.
And Tom O'Farrell.
And in this episode, we're focusing on the aftermath of COP26, which was held in Glasgow recently and made headlines all over the world. But more locally, we're going to focus on the exhibit that's been taking place at the Gaelic Centre near Beaumont, focusing on the state of our planet and what we can do about it. We're going to talk to Dietmar Finger, who organized the displays in the project, and we're also going to meet some of the students at Isla High School in Beaumont who put the graphics together, and they all have an Isla-based perspective on the state of our planet and what we can do about it.
But first, let's hear from two of the students that are behind the Isla Times who have been talking with Glenn.
Good afternoon. It's Glenn. This afternoon, we're talking to Joe and Mullet, who are students at the Isla High School, who have come together and have produced or producing the Isla Times. So we'll ask Joe first, where did the idea of the Isla Times come from?
It was in our common room area, the school library. We were all just sitting about, bored in the library, all four of us, because there's two other people in this project. And we were just thinking about, because we realized how much spare time we have, and we were thinking about what we could do with it. And that's when we thought of, oh, we can make a school newspaper.
And I noticed that you've advertised it locally in the village, but have you produced a newspaper?
Well, even though we've got like loads of spare time, it is like still hard to keep on top of it with like schoolwork as well. So it is finished. We've just yet to put it out to people, because we're trying to figure out if we should just go like ask people like door to door, or see if any local businesses want to sell it. So we're just waiting on some people to respond.
So you've spoken to the local shops in Beaumont and Port Ellen, and I presume the other villages on the island, to see what response you're going to get.
Yeah.
That's good. And what we'll ask Mullet to save you hogging the microphone.
Yeah, I was thinking that was me.
And what sort of articles have you if you have prepared articles, what sort of articles have you prepared?
We've got stories from around the island and put them into in our article. We've got a couple of articles on global warming, because that seems to be that's like a common disaster that's going to happen soon. And we got a puzzle page as well, and we've got a comic page, and we've got some, one of our co-workers, we've got a creative story he put in, and it's really good so even kids can enjoy reading the story, doing puzzles, and reading the comics, as well as the articles we have as well.
And what reaction have you had from the school, the headmaster, and the other teachers?
I think most of the teachers were actually surprised, because it doesn't seem something like that our group would do, to be honest. We told the head teacher, but we actually didn't tell any of the other teachers. So they were really shocked when they found out, and were like asking which teacher's approving of this. And we got Mr. Harrison's approval on it, and he seems pretty okay with the idea of us starting a newspaper.
And you'll print it at the school using the facilities there.
Yeah, we're going to be using the school facilities to print our newspaper.
So it's, although there's the four of you, it is would you class it as a high school project, or is it just as the four of you looking after it and dealing with it?
I would say that's really just the four of us doing it, because it's only really the four of us contributing to the newspaper. Other people will contribute story ideas or like things they've heard, and we'll put it into like an article on the newspaper. But it's mainly just us who have really contributed to it.
So you're the what might call the editorial team.
Yeah, the team. Yes. We're the team.
And before you, because it's not difficult because of what you may be printing, is somebody going to vet it before it goes to print? Would you ask somebody like Russell, Stephen, to edit it or look at it before you go to print?
Well, we've got Mr. Harrison's approval, but I think we're just going to go for it. I think we're going to check it, all like grammar and all that stuff over ourselves, because I think we're quite capable students in Isla High School, and we can do this.
Well, it's from talking to you, it sounds if the team is capable of doing it.
Thank you.
And what about, are you doing any advertising to increase the revenue? And the revenue obtained, where does the revenue go?
Well, I think each of us live in different corners of the island, and we're probably going to put up posters showing our newspaper in all the different village shops. And the money that we may make from this, I think it's going to go to, a portion of it will go to ourselves, and I will probably give a portion to the high school.
But as you're working, as you're students at the high school and using student facilities, I take it, as you say, that you will make a donation to the school.
Yeah, for all the printing and facilities that we are using, we'll probably give that money back to them from profits we may make.
And what reaction have you received or had from the parents of the four of you? Are they all backing you and keen that you carry on with it?
I'm not going to lie, I haven't told my parents about any of this, and I don't know if any of the others have.
Well, they'll know about it now when they listen to this.
I don't know when they hear this. I'll tell them to listen to the episode.
Yeah, they'll know about it as soon as it's put on our podcast. The whole country will know about it.
There's one way to tell them.
And what about social media? Because with as a younger generation, obviously you are more into social media than the likes of me, who are the older generation. So although you have access to, would you use Facebook, the community website? This is Isla.
Well, Isla High School has its own like Facebook page and website and things like that, where they post like the events and things that are going to be going on like involved with Isla High School, like fairs and Christmas fairs and things like that. So, we haven't really used anything media wise yet, but when we do, it'll most likely be the Facebook page, Isla High School Facebook page, and like the Isla High School website.
But you won't have a Facebook page of your own as the Isla Times?
Maybe, but that'd have to be something, yeah, I'd have to ask the teachers and see what they think about that.
And what about the reaction from your fellow students who are not included in the team? Are they knocking at the door to want to join the team, or are you having a different reaction? Or,
well, to be honest, I'm not 100% sure that a lot of the like students below us, because we're in our final year, so I don't think a lot of the students below us know an awful lot about what's going on with the newspaper, if they even know about it yet, because the only things that have been talked about it is between us and staff and like a select handful of people that it's just come out in conversation.
But if you're saying this is your final year, does that include the four of you? And if it does, are you going to hand it to another team, or will another team be asked by yourselves to take it on? Because obviously, if you started, you obviously want, and it's a success, which I'm sure it will be, you'll want to carry it on for the next, normally they say the next generation, but we'll say the next set of students.
Yeah, it would be great if the year below us, or even the year, any year, we'd like to take on the newspaper once we leave. But as of the moment, no one has asked about taking it on next year.
Right. So when does your it's your final year. So when does your final the team's final year end?
When is it, Mo? Is it like?
I think it ends whenever our last exam is, which will be sometime in May. So we'll all be dropping out at different times, probably.
Because it would be a shame once the work you have done. That there is not continuity, because I know when I started the Isla podcast, it was very heavy going in the beginning, and we still have a difficulty getting volunteers to join us. And I was keen, like you are keen, that once it starts, it doesn't fall away.
Yeah.
Because these ideas can be started and everybody's on board, and then they fall away, and then the idea itself falls away. So I was only thinking that the work that you have done and are doing, I would hope that you would have fellow students to take over to keep it going.
Well, I've actually got a little brother in S2, and maybe I can pass on to him and his little group of friends who can maybe carry on till they're in S6 for, so maybe another 5-4 years.
Uh-huh. Because it sounds an excellent, it is an excellent idea. And from an outsider's point of view, and not a parent, it's nice to know what is happening with the younger generation, because majority of the time you don't hear what the Isla High School are up to, unless you're on to, as you say, social media. But there's a lot of us, like myself, who are computer illiterate, and it's nice to read something, to have, like a paper. It's nice to read it instead of looking at it at a screen.
I was talking to some of the other people I was talking to Oscar, who's also involved in the newspaper, about maybe making sort of short videos like for the Facebook page or the website, just like maybe interviewing people and things like that. And then that information from the video can be put into the newspaper, so they're like contributing to each other.
And what about, Will Altamowitz, what about the Eilach paper? Have you communicated with them, as they are the local paper? Have you done any, conversation by putting an article in the Eilach? Because a lot of people tend to read the Eilach, or they send copies out all over the world. And we always, as a podcast, try and put something in the Eilach to say what we're doing, although we prefer them to look at the podcast or listen to the podcast. We have done a number of articles. Have you thought of putting an article to tell the island, once your paper is printed, what you're doing as students at the high school?
Yeah, I think that's a good way of promoting what we're doing, using the Eilach, advertising on the Eilach. And one of our other friends who is involved actually does some, I think, part-time work. Andrew does it, right?
Oh, for his journalism.
Yeah, he does like a wee bit of a part-time work at the ELUC, and I don't know what he does there, but he helps out around there. So who knows, we could have a collaboration.
Kind of a good word for us.
A good word, a collaboration, yeah. With the ELUC.
Yes. And of course, Brian from the ELUC does come up and do drumming lessons, yeah. I believe, at the high school. So I know when I first started with the podcast, it was his brain I was picking to think, should we do a podcast or a radio station? So this is where I got my introduction to podcast and radio. So he is a mind of information, and he does visit the school, I believe, doing drum lessons.
Yeah, he does.
Because you have the contacts, or you know the people, or there are people on the island that can be of help to you, but it's difficult to draw them out sometimes.
It's also quite hard to just do things like get in contact with people and talk back and forth when we've got all this extra schoolwork that we're having to do as well.
I'm going to finish now, obviously, because I'm using your timetable up. But however, we will be putting this on episode 11, not 10, because 10 is ready to go. And we will be in contact with you. And may we wish you and the team all the best. And I look forward to reading the first edition.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thanks to Joe and Mohit there, who were talking with Glenn, who dialed into the call due to COVID restrictions. Now, this episode, as Jolyon mentioned, is somewhat of a COP26 special. So let's go back to the school and Glenn's crackly phone line to see who he's found to talk to.
Good afternoon. It's Glenn again, and this time I'm at the high school talking to two of the students, Lorne and Lewis, who have been involved with the project with Dietmar Finger at the Gaelic Centre. Lewis, I believe, is going to be first because he has another lesson to go to. And I would mention that I have the chef in the kitchen who's doing some baking. So if you hear of anybody dropping anything, it's him dropping something in the kitchen. However, both of you, thank you very much for spending time this afternoon to talk to me. We did do an interview with Dietmar regarding COP26. However, when we were down, we did notice the presentation from the high school. So if I may, I will start with Lewis. And if you could just briefly, because of time, tell us what you did for the exhibition, or should we say how you got involved in the exhibition and what you did for it?
What we did for it was we had our teacher, Mr. Pollock, brought in a vacuum cleaner, and we took it apart basically as a big group and kind of worked out all the different components and materials that were part of the vacuum cleaner itself.
And did you find it interesting, an interesting project?
Yeah, it was it's quite surprising how many different parts that actually go into a vacuum cleaner and all the different materials that are used to make it.
And have you seen the exhibition at the Gaelic Centre?
I saw what our part of the taken apart vacuum looked like on its big board, but I've not actually been to see the full thing.
And have you been listening to the COP26 conference?
We listened to the live stream as a class on YouTube when it was happening.
And it's always very difficult, but I know you couldn't say, was it interesting, but was it informative, I think would be the word.
Yeah, it was definitely informative. They were speaking about, there was definitely some figures that I found quite interesting, I guess, maybe caught my eye, but yeah.
How did you get involved with the exhibition at the Gaelic Centre?
Basically, I just done the same as Lewis as a class. Took apart a Hoover to see all the components and what a Hoover's made out of and all the parts needed.
And again, same as Lewis, it was very informative and I take it an interesting subject to Hoover because there's so much, to me, there's so much plastic involved.
Yeah, there's loads of plastics, mainly plastic, and then there's also bits of copper and different metals.
And you've seen the Hoover down at the exhibition, but you yourself haven't been down to look at it?
No, I've still yet to go. I've seen it on the board in class, but not down at the gallery.
Not the exhibition, no. But again, we asked the question, as we did with Lewis, with COP26, so much coverage on television, YouTube, you name it, it's been on everything. It's a very difficult subject to understand. Even I sometimes have difficulty. But did you grasp what they were trying to achieve? Let's put it that way.
Sort of, yeah. Just the mainly what I gathered was the impacts that we have on climate change.
It's an interesting subject, but it's a very difficult subject to grasp, I think.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. But do you feel that, was it a success from your generation's point of view? Because obviously they kept saying it's not only our generation, but it's your generation and future generations. Do you think by listening to what they're saying, they're going to achieve anything, or do we have to wait another year, which they're going to do another one next year?
Well, hopefully our generation can.
Good, good. Well, gentlemen, I will leave you there, and I will say thank you very much, and no doubt we will speak again, hopefully in the near future.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks very much.
We'll go back to Crackley Glen near the end of the episode, but first it's time to hear from Dietmar Finger, who has been in conversation with Jolyon about their COP26 exhibition.
I'm here today with Dietmar Finger and in the Gaelic Centre near Beaumont, and this time we're going to talk about the recent exhibition focusing on the state of our planet that was put together by Dietmar together with Isla High School students. Mm. So I'd like to ask Dietmar first how this exhibit came about.
Yes, I have to admit I'm interested in environmental issues, and I read books, I follow the press, I think I care for this since I'm a wee boy. And just recently it almost felt like I'm living in a science fiction movie. You hear broadcasts which talk about the Gulf Stream is probably changing direction, things which would be catastrophic. But the world seems to spin on like it ever did for the last, whatever, 50, 70 years. And the Club of Rome, I don't know if you heard of the Club of Rome promoting in the 70s, I think it was 1972, that we couldn't live on like we lived at the time, consuming as we did, polluting as we did. These calls, these wake-up calls, I think, were largely unheard, or if they were heard, they were very ignored. And watching the daily life here on Isla or everywhere, you see so many people like idling their engines, waiting for the ferry for half an hour or even longer, sitting in the car with a t-shirt instead of wearing a jacket and switching the car and the heating off. And I always wonder why the CalMax stuff doesn't bother. I mean, I'm sure they're fed up with it, but why don't people understand we can't do this anymore? It's not good for themselves either. Fuel is expensive. So why just idling their engines? So seeing the young folk parking on Friday evenings at the square and just idling their engines. What's cool about this? However, I thought the climate summit in Glasgow would be the ideal occasion to get some information out. I found during my, I would not call it research, but you might want to call it research, information which surprised me myself, although I knew a bit about all these issues. I mean, I wasn't surprised to learn that we humans dominate the land biosphere on this planet. There are 7.5 billion people, approaching 8 billion people. And this makes up for about 32% of the biosphere on land. Now, beside us, there are our domesticated animals, all our cattle, chicken, sheep, you name, and mostly mass-produced. Most of them don't live a nice life like they do on Isla. And all these animals, they make up for another 63 or 64%, which leaves like 3-point-something% of space on the biosphere on land for pandas and elephants and rabbits, you know, which is very scary, isn't it? And the hunger for meat is growing in China and in the developing countries. So we have to do something about this. That's just one example of the posters I created.
So if you haven't had a chance to visit the Gallic Center in Beaumont, you'll see that there are several posters, displays that Dietmar put together that really, I think, were designed to draw people's attention to the situation that our planet is in, largely man-made challenges that we're facing. And I know in the flyer that you put together, Dietmar, the first question on the cover is, what do you know about the state of our planet? And those graphics were designed to really bring some points home that perhaps people had not realized or weren't aware of.
This was never meant to be an exhibition of my own or an exhibition of art or something. It's about information. And I was always hoping I could involve the community in one way or the other. I was especially interested in involving young people. And this is why I got in touch with the Isla High School. They were the first I contacted, and I was glad that they were so excited and so keen on joining. I remember our first meeting here in the Galley College with Russell and Stephen, and I thought it was just the two of them showing up, but no, they brought 4 or 5 other colleagues. So here we were, like 6-7 teachers and myself, talking about the idea of this exhibition. And it's nice to see what the young folk contributed. It makes a nice mixture, I think. But also tries to involve the community is this blank poster I left near the cafe with post-its asking visitors to leave their own ideas about what we could possibly do on Isla about environmental issues. And it seems to develop into a nice collection of ideas, which I hope is a base for the high school to start a follow-up project of some sort. Yeah, God knows to what this is going to lead. I hope there will be a result and probably a follow-up exhibition in a year or so. I mean, that's just an idea. Let's see.
Well, I know one of the things that I took away from the exhibit was the fact that it's not really a simple choice anymore, like paper or plastic, glass or plastic. It's much more complex than that. And every action, every activity that we're involved with on a daily basis generates a carbon footprint that is sometimes difficult to address or to know how to address. So the second question posed in your flyer was, what will you do now that the world has become aware of climate emergency?
Yes.
And perhaps some of us are looking for governments to take strong actions. We've been following COP26 over the last several months, and especially over the last 2 weeks. And it's not clear that much real progress has been made, but it's also clear that individuals can make a difference themselves.
Mm.
So I suppose I'd ask you, what small things do you do? What can people do in their everyday lives to make a difference?
That's a fair question. And I got asked by one of the pupils of the local high school about what I personally do. And I spent almost half of the weekend replying to the five, six questions he had addressed. And I have calculated my own carbon footprint before a few times. They are online calculators which allow you to calculate your footprint. Some even, I think that was a Scandinavian one, some even include the question of how often do you use a commuting ferry, which is pretty much what we have to do living on the island. There are questions, how often did you fly during the last year? How much meat do you eat? How much plastic do you recycle? How often do you change your clothes or your computer gadgets, your phone? How far do you have to commute? How big is your house? All these questions. And I'm in the position, I don't have to commute to work anymore. I did it for many, many years, and I commuted for way too far and way too long. Of course, I've been in foreign countries. I've used the plane many times. But calculating the footprint I have, the carbon footprint of myself the last 2-3 years, I was shocked to learn that although I hardly eat meat, I didn't fly in 2-3 years except to Glasgow for an hospital appointment a couple of times. I use my car twice a week. I try to buy as local as possible, which is almost impossible because there's not much on Isla, not much produced on Isla, except like Nerebus Farm and other wee places. You always have to buy imported food, and it mostly comes in plastic. However, I was shocked that if everybody would live the way I live, we would need 2.8 planets Earth. So imagine you add somebody's flight to the Mediterranean or to New York or overseas. Imagine you add the fuel most people have to use to drive to work, to commute to work every day. Imagine people eating meat every day, which became so normal. Your footprint is shocking, and I would have to check the poster. I think the average carbon footprint in Britain shows that we would need 4-point-something planets Earth if everybody would live like the average in Britain. The worst are the Americans, the Australians. I don't want to say anything false, but there's information in the exhibition which allows you to find more about this. So what do I do? I don't idle my engine when I wait for the ferry. As I said, I don't eat much meat, probably once a week or 2 weeks. I hardly buy new fashion. Honestly, I think I bought a couple of waistcoats while I'm on Isla.
Locally made.
Sorry? Locally
made. Locally made.
As locally as possible. That's Isla Woolen Mill kind of tweet, yes. It's hard to do anything about it except living very sensibly, I think. Whatever we do has an impact. Whatever we do. I mean, no other, if you get into this and realize that no other species except us is getting dressed. No other species is burning fossil fuel to prepare food. No other species is washing the clothes we need to wear. Or using shampoo, makeup, deo sticks, everything we all use, toothbrushes. Which other species is shifting 1.5 tons or 2 tons of metal, plastic and rubber to the beach for a walk or to the next city to do some shopping? I mean, it's obvious that this can't work and we will have to do something about it. Otherwise, it's going to be a big disaster.
But when you lay it out like that, to me, and I could imagine to a lot of people, it's overwhelming.
It is.
Everyday life. Yeah. Everything that we do creates a carbon footprint. So are we better off to put pressure on governments and international organizations to make changes on our behalf? Because surely changes are coming. They will be forced upon us if we don't make changes ourselves.
Does the government have to put pressure on people not to throw litter out of their car windows? I mean, does the government have to put pressure on people to drive less or eat less meat? I think the government should at least make efforts to inform people and help people. But if you put pressure on people, pressure causes pressure from the other side. It's hard to say. I think people should live as sensible as they can and should try and get informed to learn what they could possibly do. That's what I would say. Of course, governments have to do something. They have to force the industry away from fossil fuels. Soon, companies will have to pay for their carbon emissions. I'm sure. Carbon emissions come way too cheap. I think, as far as I remember, in Germany, a ton of carbon should cost about 180 euros to allow the government to pay for the damage that carbon creates. At the moment, as far as I know, they charge 30 or 40 euros. And already people complain this is driving the fuel bill or heating bill up too much. It's going to hurt. We have to face it. Yeah. So this is, of course, left to the government to do this.
That's really depressed me.
Well, I'm sorry, no. But we waited to face this problem, this crisis, since the 70s. Yeah. And now that we all seem to learn about it and start to understand, it's very late.
People around the world are much more aware of the problems that we're causing. But since, in the U.S. and in Western Europe, I think the whole Earth catalog, the whole issue of, you know, being able to see the blue planet, that came back from the Apollo space missions.
Yes.
And a famous picture taken in Christmas 1968 of the entire planet Earth as viewed from space. And for the first time, you saw this Earthrise.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm involved with satellite technology, so the information about atmospheric content, all those things, we're able to measure it, monitor it much more accurately, much more. But still, having that information doesn't seem to dent our ambition for industrial growth, social growth, population growth. So the pressure continues. But I wonder, you know, to go back to the exhibit, what can people who have come to see the exhibit, what do you expect them to take away from the exhibit?
One thing they would have to take away, I think, is that during the lockdown 2020, we all thought the world came to a standstill. Because there was hardly any flight or anything, people were working from home, they weren't commuting as much, but the carbon footprint went down only by around 6%, which is incredible, isn't it? I mean, I would have thought it would have come down by 50, 60, 70%, but no, it's just around 6%, which shows how much we will have to do. And back to your question, there's information to be found about how much water or energy is used to produce meat compared to beans, to vegetables, to nuts. I can't remember, did I put a poster about the water usage of cotton, for example? I know a pair of jeans, the cotton for a pair of jeans requires about 10,000 liters of water. a t-shirt, 2,500 liters of water. So fast fashion is nothing we can afford. These are things I think people can take away. Don't consume as much. Eat sensibly. Commute sensibly. Because the effects we have on the planet are much larger and stronger than we think. This is what these posters show.
I'd like to go back to a little bit more about how you put the exhibits together.
Mm-hmm.
How did you assemble the information that's in the powerful graphics that you put together?
These are facts, actually, I found reading before-mentioned books or following the press. I double-checked on the information, so I made sure I wouldn't put up something which is false. I don't read the red letter press. I read The Guardian or German newspapers and follow BBC Radio 4, for example, and I trust this kind of journalism. And often it happened that I found the same facts in the books I was reading, German books or English books. So I made sure this is as trustworthy as possible. And I always leave the source, a link to the source or information about the source at the bottom of the poster. So if somebody's interested, he could always follow up and double check and then make up his own opinion. This exhibition doesn't represent my opinion. It just shows the information. And it also shows, that's probably worth to mention, information about a worldwide average or a British or I think there's a German example. But it doesn't necessarily represent Isla. That would be another exhibition. Yes, I collected these facts and figures and created posters. I used the frames I use for my landscape paintings, my watercolor paintings. So the posters are designed to size. And I wouldn't call it the gaps, but the spaces in between those posters, which I think create like the bridge through the exhibition, was filled with what the pupils of the high school created. And they've been very creative. So it doesn't look like they fill gaps. It's a complete exhibition. Please come and see the exhibition. Have a look. Be aware of what we do. Be aware of what we could do. It would be unfair to say, this is depressive. I don't want to get involved. It's up to the young folk. It's not up to the young folk. I think we, our generation, my parents' generation, and the couple of generations before, I mean, starting from the Industrial Revolution, which started in Britain, we created this situation, and I think we should feel responsible to support the young folk to do something about this. We can't leave it to them. So please, all the adults, all the parents, come and see this exhibition and talk to the kids and come up with ideas, stick them on the poster, just do whatever you think is sensible to have an effect on this crisis.
And the exhibit is open until December the 3rd, is that correct?
Yes, exactly. We take it down on Saturday the 4th, yeah.
And we'll put some resources on our website. With that, thank you very much, Dietmar.
Thanks for having me again.
It's a thought-provoking exhibit, and I urge everyone to visit before December the 3rd and to follow up online as well. Thank you again, Dietmar.
Thanks a lot.
Unfortunately, we, mainly me, have been a bit slow in getting this episode out. However, as Jolyon said, you can check out our website to see more COP26 resources. We can now go back to Glenn and see where he is and who he has found to talk to.
I am still here at Isla High School and have been joined by Kaylin and Tilly, two students at the high school, who are very keen on the project and very keen on what COP26 has been trying to achieve. So although I'll start with Kaylin first, if I may, could you please tell me what involvement you have had with the high school and Dietmar at the Gaelic Centre? And do you have, as your generation, an opinion of COP26? And do you feel it's achieved anything or is achieving anything?
So I took part in a thing for the Gaelic College where we made wood frames and we chose an animal to talk about for the COP26 about how the climate change is affecting it. I chose a tiger and you could see how much climate change has affected it, how many tigers are going down by rates. I think COP26 is a very good thing for the world right now because everything that's happened with the fires and that, and I just generally think it's a really good thing.
And Tilly, your involvement at the Gaelic Centre?
So I visited the climate change exhibit in the Gaelic Centre and it really kind of put everything into perspective, the numbers which we were shown and things like that. But as someone who, I read a lot about climate change and I have a really strong opinion of it. I don't know if that's because of the way I've been brought up or if it's all the news that's happening at the moment. I think COP26 was horrific. I don't think it made as big of an impact as it should have, and decisions which should have been made weren't made or haven't been made soon enough. The whole thing just kind of, I feel like it's probably made a worse impact by flying all of these people into Glasgow and adding extra carbon emissions into the atmosphere, which is just kind of, it's completely defeated the project. Like, it's just completely taken everything out of perspective and thrown in even more harm, which we are doing to the world we're in at the moment.
But it's a very, as I said to the boys, it's a very difficult thing to grasp. But as a younger generation and what they were trying to do, I would have thought that you have a greater understanding of it. And from what you're saying to me, and my feelings are probably the same as yours, that although all these people flew over and President had an escort of about 40 vehicles, so obviously the carbon footprint is, I don't know, but do you think that they've made any, what's the word I would use, any advancement on the 1.5, or are we going to go to 2.10 or something?
The decisions that were made, the money markets have officially like kind of gotten involved and have said that they're going to start moving the pension investments from fossil fuels into renewable energy. But you kind of look at it from where we stand and where we're the ones who are going to have to deal with this, and we're the ones who have to go into this world and bring the next generation into this world. And right now we don't really have any hope because the generations and the people who are in charge in the first place, who we have put there, really aren't doing what they're said they've been doing, because they're not putting the whole thing, I don't think they're realizing how serious it actually is and how much this will affect their children and the children their children have. And it's terrifying, utterly terrifying. I'm glad we're moving forward. Like, we have made a small step, which will work out to be quite a big step, but we need to do more. And no one's really realizing that enough for us to actually do something.
Is this the opinion of your generation and your friends and fellow students at the high school, or is it showing interest to the students at the high school, or is it one of those things, oh, it's another conference, it's another lot of talking, but no action, or nothing will, there will be no outcome of it?
My friends and my my fellow students, it's really mixed bag. Like, people aren't taking it seriously and it's terrifying. I don't know what it's like for you, Caitlin.
Well, most of my family have been agreeing with it, but it doesn't sound like, because they are scared for my future, because it is my future and every single person in my whole generation that has to live with what this outcome has come with. that makes any sense.
And how do you think this affects the island? No doubt you have read a number of articles that Dietmar has put in the Eelach, and we interviewed him yesterday. So from your point of view, it would be an interesting podcast to listen to, because we spent half an hour with him. And he, like yourselves, is very keen on the state of the planet.
Definitely, yeah. Like sea rise,
water rising.
Yes, it could affect the whole island if that happens to us, because we could have no idea what outcome that could be if everything goes wrong and it goes past it.
The whole idea of putting things in the in either North and South Pole, they want to put things like glass beads down, which will reflect the light away to stop the warming of the ice in the Atlantic. But we don't know what the outcome will be for the animals around it, as well as when those glass beads get into the sea, there'll be millions and millions and millions of them, and that will create a density to the water along with the melting of the polar ice caps. So we will lose so much land, and I don't think our human civilization is ready to live in boats for the rest of our lives. So
it would be something. It sounds, if everything doesn't go right, it sounds we'll all be living in a boat like Noah's Ark, as one might put it. But after listening to the two of you, which I'm very grateful for, I get the impression, although you were listening to and understood what they were saying, that one, they didn't do the right thing, and one, they're obviously not moving quick enough, because you have the China-Russia situation with coal. You have India as well. But obviously, when you're thinking of these things, and I'm sure you do, the two of you, you must think of the people that live in these countries.
Yeah, definitely. The amount of work and amount of jobs which are in fossil fuels will fund so many families. And if we just cut all of them out, those people need to be able to have a livelihood and be able to have work which will fund and feed and clothe their entire family. And especially things in China, the fact that they're so populated, the coal industry is huge, and it's just, it's hard to even think about, because we're not in that situation and we're not having to go through all of this turmoil over everything. The Scotland's whole temperature gauge, the time amount they've set on that, I'll be 50. Like, that's horrific. Like, I'll be 50 years old. I'll have had to make the decision to bring children into my life, or I'll have to make the decision on so many things which will affect my life and my friends' children and my friends of friends and all of that. The fact that they're leaving it that late, half of them probably won't even still be living at that point. Like, the temperature is rising so quickly, and they're not actually putting into perspective. They're making promises with no time put, which is realistic. Like, the damage is being done and will be done sooner than by the time I'm 50 years old. Like, it's just ridiculous, to be honest.
Well, I'm going to close there, and may I take this opportunity of thanking the both of you.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Sparing the time. Thank you very much. All right, thank you very much. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that was three very interesting conversations with the Isle of Times and obviously the four students involved with the planet and COP26. Thank you to them. Thank you to Russell Pollock and Greg for taking the time for me to talk to them. And we're very grateful to Greg for recording everything for us. And obviously, the headmaster will say thank you to him for allowing us to use the time of his staff and his students. Thank you once again.
That's all we have time for in this COP26 special episode. Don't forget to check out our website, thisisisla.co.uk, where we have every episode listed and links to all the people that were featured in them too. We are also on the lookout for your Isla and Juris stories. You can email them to thisisisla@gmail.com.
You can also follow us on social media, on Facebook at This Is Isla, on Twitter at This Is Isla, and on Instagram at This Is Isla Podcast. Thanks for listening to This Is Isla.
Thank you for listening to this episode of This Is Isla Podcast. Our theme song is Swift Pound Cashback by Fraser Scott.